of law school, baby. It all starts here.
Caleb Parsons is 6'9", swinging 80 to shoot the 30.
Game over, season over. The dude is dead.
What? It's unbelievable.
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Tuesday, April 7th, 2009. We're doing another late night recording here. I'm Adam Berry, the assistant sports editor and softball beat writer for Alligator Sports. And joining me tonight are...
sports editor and football beat writer Evan Drexler.
Baseball beat writer Kyle Maestri.
Football beat writer and columnist Phil Kegler, the
communist
formerly known as Mr. Brackett.
Communist.
Mikey Ferdinando, basketball beat writer.
I forgot to say I was a socialist.
We didn't declare our political parties.
Also, do we do that backwards? Don't we usually give our names, then our beats?
Yeah,
yeah, I switched it up on
you. Killed it. I had to follow suit.
Yeah. So. Sorry,
I'd like to say that I did it the normal way and that you guys are completely messing
me
up.
You're a free thinker.
Well, I'll let you guys in on a little secret. I actually forgot my name. So I did my beat first.
The thing you most associate yourself with.
He's no longer
I am a sports editor. That is me.
All right, we got a lot to talk about tonight.
What?
Phil Kegler saying ridiculous things the entire half hour before we start recording this. Did you just say nobody knows who I am?
That's great.
Phil's getting an early start to the nonsense he's going to spout throughout the show tonight. So let's get started with it. We're recording after the NCAA tournament championship game here. So let's get some thoughts about that. Carolina ran away with it the whole time. Let's get some thoughts about that, guys. What do we think?
Well, Adam, you and I were sitting working on the paper for what is tomorrow's date? Tuesday. We're working on Tuesday's paper, and, you know, we kind of like have this thing of we're working on the paper, but we really want to watch a national championship game. Mm-hmm. And by the time we get back into our sports office from the production room and we see the score is like 23-10, we're like, okay, maybe we don't need to watch this game after all. Because it was all North Carolina the entire game. There was never a chance for Michigan State. And it was a pretty bad national championship game, all things considered. Nothing like last year when we had about 10 people in the sports office with both doors closed. And Mario Chalmers put up that amazing three-pointer to send the game into overtime, killing Mike McCall's hopes because he had money riding on Memphis, and then Kansas just ran away with the game in overtime. But, yeah, this game was a complete letdown compared to last year's national championship game.
I would have rather been putting out a paper than watching that game because it was just terrible. It was a foregone conclusion that UNC was going to win, and Michigan State never made a game of it the entire time.
Yeah, it was quite boring. And to add on to Evan's story, the Mario Chalmers shot actually won my bracket challenge and lost Mike McCall's, which quite possibly could be my one shining moment.
Yeah, my big problem with the game is actually 5 commercial breaks after the game ended before one shining moment. That was a big problem for me.
That was your biggest complaint of the whole thing, not the fact that it wasn't interesting.
I mean, that was out the window after the first, like, 10 minutes of the game.
I had people over my house that turned into a social event.
We had delicious platters from Chili's. That was great. But
how do you get things catered from Chili's?
It's okay, we're quite the host.
We got the
grandma show.
I say, it's always good times at the Woodlands.
All right, we mentioned the bracket challenge from last year a little bit earlier there. Let's talk about this year's because we had the running bracket challenge here at Alligator Sports where people could win fabulous prizes by beating you, right, Evan?
Yes, they could, and they did because I did not do so well in the end. Pretty much everyone picked North Carolina, it seemed, and that vaulted them over me because I was in pretty good shape heading into the Final Four, but I didn't have any points left. And so everyone with North Carolina going to the championship game and winning pretty much jumped over me. So I finished in 66th place, which means 65 of you, except for the people who are... who work for the Alligator, have a chance to win the $200 in gift certificates for first place and $100 in gift certificates for second place. I don't know when they're going to do the drawing, but I'm sure you'll be notified once they make the decision who wins.
Yes, keep an eye out for that. But right now, let's go through the who won, who came out on top. Entry named Red Saber finished with 97 points, came out on top, narrowly edging out our own Mike McCall, who finished with 95 points with a 13.8 risk percentage. What do we think of the fact that the person with a 2.4 risk percentage won the whole thing? Is that really indicative of what happened this year in the tournament?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty much chalk all the way through. So you were smart enough to pick UNC to win, and you didn't listen to Roy Williams like I did. Then you had a pretty good chance of finishing high. I mean, there was really nothing to... Michigan State, I think their run to the Final Four was the most ludicrous thing that happened, and they were a 2-seed. Yeah. So, I mean, when that's the most ridiculous thing that's happening, I don't really think that it was a wild year.
Yeah, and let's just be thankful Mike McCall didn't win this bracket, too. He won our private pool that we play, and he's been pretty obnoxious about it. So
But his bracket name was, as we've noted on here before, Ty Law's son, so he would have been pretty obnoxious about the fact that his team won.
Which, yeah. Despite his him being obnoxious, is flipping genius.
Yeah, yeah, that's a great
flipping,
name.
Good word. Yeah.
Excellent.
Now, this tournament altogether was pretty boring. I mean, I think I said after the Sweet 16, that round mm-hmm. of games, that was the worst Sweet 16 I'd ever seen. It was just all the favorite seeds were winning. There was one close game, and it was the Pitt Xavier game was close. And like, other than that, it was pretty standard Sweet 16. The same thing for the Final Four. Oh, two ones, a three, and a two. Nothing huge and surprising.
Villanova Pitt was the best game of the tournament.
Yeah,
in my opinion,
that was a very good game.
All right, let's go around the room here with how we finished in the bracket challenge. Defer and Kyle, you guys tied for 57th with 75 points. Pretty good. How do you guys feel about your brackets? How you turned out?
Well, I feel really terrible about everything because
about everything.
I had a good bracket, you know, for the most part. I had two Final Four teams. I had UConn and Villanova. But my late night panic, in which I switched from UNC winning it all to Louisville winning it all, and I made UNC lose to Gonzaga in my bracket, and that clearly did not work out for me. I'm glad that I'm on record as saying I only switched because I was up in the air about Ty Lawson's ankle, and I said if Ty Lawson was healthy on our preview podcast that he would win. So I feel okay about that, but I obviously wish I never switched at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I feel a little bit better than Kyle. I had Louisville from the beginning, so they lost. Like, I kind of finished where I thought I'd be. The only pick I'm kind of disappointed about was I had West Virginia in the Elite Eight. They obviously didn't make it, so that's pretty disappointing.
I was just foolhardy from the beginning.
All right, Evan, you finished 66. We've already mentioned that a little bit. How do you feel about your bracket?
I had Pitt winning over Memphis, and obviously that didn't happen. Memphis went out in the Sweet 16. Kyle is shaking his head because he hates Memphis so much. Pitt.
It's not that I hate Memphis so much, I just accurately evaluated them, that's all.
Okay. And then I had Pitt, and they lost in the Elite Eight to Nova. My best pick was probably I had Michigan State in the Final Four, and I almost put them in the championship game against Memphis, but decided I like the name Memphis better than Michigan State. I don't know. So, you know.
Did school colors come into play here as well?
I think the green uniforms are way better than Memphis's. But
decided a Spartan could take down a Tiger.
Yeah, no, I'm not that bad with it. But, yeah, I had Michigan State in the Final Four. I guess that was my best pick. My worst pick was probably I had Wake Forest going to the Elite Eight, but they lost in the first round to Cleveland State, so that was pretty bad. And I guess Memphis going to the national championship game was a pretty bad pick, too.
I would say that most of my picks were bad picks. I finished in 108th. I had no Final Four teams. My bracket fell apart in the Sweet 16 and
Elite
Eight. It'd
be pretty hard to be worse than that, right?
Well, you would think it would be hard to be worse than that, but one person in this room, self-proclaimed Mr. Bracket, did far
Mr. Brackets.
Worse.
I'm not sure why there's an S, but there was definitely an S the whole time.
All right, Mr. Brackets, you finished in 136th out of 141 people. Defend yourself.
Well, I live my life by a pretty common principle. I win big or I lose big. And it just comes down to that. This year,
it's like a really bad big timers video.
Last year,
everything real big. For
last year, I won my pool. This year, last place. Give and take some. It's kind of like my love life, way up, way down.
It's worth noting, too, we were talking about this before. The people who you finished ahead of, one of them had Arizona State winning it all over, I think,
FSU. He thought Christmas was coming in March. So.
They had FSU in the Final Four. And the last two were like Gator Fanatic team names. So what was you were Phil on the Hill, right?
I was Phil on the Hill. Nobody kidnapped my body. No aliens came and put my bracket.
What's he talking about?
It was not quite, it wasn't the year for Phil on the Hill.
What did you have going in that went so wrong, though? Be specific.
You also had no Final Four
teams.
Yeah,
no Final Four teams. That really killed me. Got jumped off the UNC bandwagon. Probably because I just can't stand to ever agree with Mike McCall on anything. Michigan State over Louisville, I will never believe, even though I watch it happen.
Yeah, that's hard to watch.
Pitt and Villanova, like, it's a buzzer beater shot. Like, I don't feel terrible about that. And, yeah, the Memphis thing was just a terrible error in judgment. It's kind of never let me forget. So,
what was your national championship game?
It was Pitt over Louisville.
All right. Mine was Louisville over Pitt. And then I, like Kyle, went with North Carolina losing to Gonzaga because I was also convinced by Roy Williams' falsehoods about Ty Lawson being really hurt. So
it's not like Phil made terrible picks. I mean, he picked 2-1 seeds. You know, he just picked the wrong one seed. It's not like he was picking, you know, Cleveland.
Well, I mean, I would argue that
four.
It is like Phil made terrible picks.
Absolutely.
If he finished 136 out of 141.
I'm saying for the championship, he made reasonable picks. He wasn't picking 12 seeds to win the national.
No, no, no. The worst thing was by far I had West Virginia going Elite Eight, losing to Dayton, which was terrible.
You were convinced about Dayton's greatness by Kyle.
Yeah. No.
I wasn't convinced. West Virginia going to the Elite Eight.
But you had Dayton in the Sweet 16.
No, they played each other in the first round.
Oh, okay. Never mind. Forget it. Adam, you can edit that out, right?
I probably won't. Let's talk about some of the best memories we have from this tournament. We already mentioned it's kind of, you know, a little bit of a downer, not the most exciting tournament by any means. What good do we take? Like, what were our shining moments, if we can use that reference yet again?
All right, well, my best and worst memories came in the same game. It was Pitt Villanova. LaVance Fields gets fouled with like a few seconds left. Put Pitt up by like one, I think it was.
Tied it.
So I think, okay, Pitt's going to do it. They're going to go to overtime. They're going to get it done for me. And then the next play, Scotty Reynolds scores. And when they win, I lose. Kyle jumps ahead of me.
Well, at that point in time, D-Furs and I's bracket looked good because the first day of Elite Eight games, Louisville didn't play yet, who was both of our champions. And we also had Oklahoma, who didn't play yet. So we had gotten – did Connecticut play before them or after them?
I don't know.
All right. Well, either way, we got Connecticut in from that side. We both had that. So the only difference in our bracket was the Pitt-Villanova game. So it's all going to come down to that, seemingly, assuming that we rose to the top, which we didn't. But it was very intense the whole time. That was definitely my best moment. I was very loud in my apartment, yelling at the TV. Scotty Reynolds hit the game-winning shot. That was incredible. Worst moment, Louisville, Michigan State. Like, just watching them pathetically lose to Michigan State and Terrence Williams score 5 points. It was sad and terrible, and I hope I don't experience that again.
Yeah, Pitt and Villanova certainly ranks up at the top. Another great moment, especially watching with friends, was the VCU-UCLA affair, especially because I had, like, gone VCU on the preview podcast, and then in my one shining moment of brilliance in the 3 days up until making my bracket, I actually switched to UCLA and was watching with a bunch of people that had picked VCU. And so having UCLA come out on top was very sweet, even though Eric Maynor scared the living daylights out of me.
I want to talk about, you mentioned FSU on this
show. Let it
show.
Be known, Phil's proudest moment was a 1-point victory that barely happened in a first round game where he picked the favorite. So that's all you need to know about Phil's tournament.
All right, and about all of our tournaments, you could say. Remember on this preview podcast, we said FSU lock. Not even an option. I mean, that ranks in some of our worst.
Clearly, the
picks,
thing
right?
we got the worst was FSU, as far as like our level of certainty. If we're playing confidence points, like pick them, like we would have put like 1,000 confidence points on that game, we all would have been wrong.
Did we all have them in the Sweet 16?
I definitely did.
Yeah, yes. But I mean, I wasn't. It's not like we said, okay, for sure they'll beat Xavier. I'd be shocked. It was just we really didn't think Wisconsin had a chance. We were obviously wrong about that.
We gave them no chance to lose in the first round. Phil, speaking of confidence points, how about North Dakota State? How'd that work out?
You know. They gave me a ride. That's all I can ask for out of the Bison. Ben Woodside, I think, threw up almost 30-plus points.
Yeah. 38, I think, something like that.
He really threw down. You know, it happens sometimes. It was obviously not my year. I lost big instead of winning big.
It was a decent pick. I mean, it wasn't terrible. I think it ended up looking better than it was when he first made it. So it wasn't like he got embarrassed in that game. And no, I didn't even throw Dayton out there because I was so sure. It wasn't even an upset to me. Yeah. So.
All right, Evan, tell us what your best and worst.
For my bracket,
just like, as you know, best and worst memories from watching the tournament.
Oh, okay. Well, the best memories after a pretty bland first 2 days of the tournament, watching the double overtime and overtime games happen simultaneously on Friday, the first Friday night of the tournament. That was awesome. Florida State, you know, losing big time to Wisconsin, and then. Oh, was that other game? Oh, Ohio State-Siena was the first game in there. That was the most exciting moment of the tournament, I think, because it was just two overtime games going on at the same time. Adam is shaking his head at me.
That was completely mine, the Ohio State-Siena game, because we were watching that before we recorded a podcast from my apartment one time. That was when Kyle famously stood up on my couch and screamed, "Too much madness, too much madness," because of those two games going on late. But yeah, I remember going from extreme happiness when I thought Ohio State had it to leaping off my couch and like landing in a heap on the floor when Siena hit the game-winning shot.
To be fair, you also crumpled on the floor when Oklahoma lost in the women's Final Four the other night.
Speak for the cat.
Yeah. A startling upset.
Yeah, I couldn't handle it. I felt bad for Courtney Paris. She's going to get back that $64,000 at some point, maybe when she makes that first WNBA contract.
I think somebody at Oklahoma University should start like a Facebook group that's like everyone gives a penny for Courtney Paris. And if they get enough people to give like, you know, $1, some insignificant amount of money, they can help her pay her scholarship back. Good idea.
Well, so did Courtney Paris choke in that game?
I didn't watch the game deeper. I can't possibly tell you.
No, but by we'll argue about whether or not it was a guarantee or not, but she definitely, like, her goal was to make it to the title game. and they lose in the Final Four.
So. I mean, there was some level of choking because they were up big at halftime, and then Louisville came out on like a 20-2 run or something.
She failed in accomplishing her goal.
If you want to call that choking, then sure. Yeah. But
she lost big.
Much like Phil.
Much like Phil.
You guys have something to talk about next time.
Sure do. The other thing about the tournament that was really startling, that happened so long ago that we all kind of forgot it, was the wake upset.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, like, I do actually kind of remember saying on the preview podcast that Wake's mildly inconsistent. Of course, I picked them anyway, so that didn't mean much. I took them to Sweet 16. But I think me and Kyle as well possibly said if Cleveland State matched up with anyone else,
yeah,
we would have picked them.
Yeah.
So I don't know what that proves about us, but they were good.
Not much.
Well, no.
And to get back on track, I hadn't mentioned my, you know, my least proud moments in the tournament. I was going to say Wake Forest losing because I had them in the Elite Eight. So that was kind of upsetting. And also watching Memphis not even put up a fight against Missouri in that Sweet 16 game, that was just embarrassing for Memphis and for John Calipari. But he's in a better place now.
He's moved on.
He's moved on, yeah. I'd say Memphis was definitely one of my worst memories as well. I already mentioned my my best was the Siena, you know, that whole night, even though it didn't, you know, maybe it didn't work out for me, but it was still just, that to me was the March Madness that we came for, and that, you know, was the shining moment through, you know, the otherwise what I would consider a pretty mediocre tournament here.
Yeah.
But let's move on to another topic here. Some under the radar players from the tournament who came out sort of surprised you guys a little bit. Let's start with Phil. Who do you got? All right. Phil, Phil, you don't want to win big or
Phil's
lose big
fine
with this topic?
Yeah. Sorry. I guess I'll go with Robert.
Sally.
Yeah. Memphis kid, 10 for 15 in the first round. Drops like 35 points after averaging 4. We probably mentioned it before on an earlier podcast. And I'll give a final shout-out to Ben Woodside of North Dakota State because gave me a little bit of hope.
Yeah. So under the radar, you forgot his last name.
Yeah.
Maybe even his first name.
It's possible.
All right, well, I'm going to go London Warren, the point guard from Dayton. He didn't score a lot of points, but he threw some really great assists and some great passes in that game. I was really impressed with him.
All right, I'm going to go with Ronald Moore from Siena for, you know, you know, that big shot at the end of the game, and also for crushing my dreams, and, you know, really coming under the radar to surprise me.
I don't have anyone. I didn't follow individual games closely enough. I really didn't. So to pay attention to the players on bad teams who went to the first round, I don't know. I really didn't pay attention to that closely enough.
All right, Kyle.
Well, I got two. I'm gonna go with Goran Sutan, who didn't play for a small school. He plays for Michigan State, but I wouldn't say most people were pointing to him as somebody who would make a big impact on the tournament, and he just absolutely killed Louisville in that first half and was pretty much the reason they ran away with it. And then Orlando Mendez Valdez, who I dubbed the oil spill from Western Kentucky, was very impressive in their first round upset of Illinois and their subsequent close loss to Gonzaga in the second round.
Yeah, another flipping great nickname.
Yeah.
All right, here's one thing we didn't talk about before the show, but it's our poll question for tomorrow's paper. We brought it up. This Carolina team just tore through the tournament, won every game by double digits, I believe we said. Was this team better than the Florida back-to-back championship
Absolutely
team?
Absolutely not. No. I mean, it would be a good game if they played, possibly. Like, it would be a blowout, but Florida wins.
Yeah, we had this discussion actually on our own earlier in the night, and we all agreed that Florida would beat them.
Okay.
Well, I think it's impossible to say who would win if they played. Like, it's just, there's no way to possibly determine that, and it doesn't really matter either because there's different circumstances, different, you know, different everything. But
thanks for playing along.
As far as what they,
validating my question,
but no, but I mean, I think we can still compare them to each other. And as far as what they've accomplished, Florida is going to get the nod for going back to back and for doing it convincingly. I think UNC could have put themselves in that class if they didn't choke it away last year, where they had an equally talented, you know, they had the same guys, mm-hmm, and they got whooped by Kansas in the Final Four. So had they been able to go back to back, you know, obviously it would be a much closer talk.
Yeah, Florida in its first run through the tournament won every game by double digits except for the close victory against Georgetown. That was their one really close game. The Corey Brewer's miracle shot while getting fouled won that game for them in the Sweet 16. But other than that, they pretty much cruised through both tournaments. I think the Oregon game in the second tournament was a little bit close.
Yeah,
but
even,
I mean,
that wasn't
and,
too
and,
close.
I mean, it was within double digits, but it wasn't, you know, UF had a solid 7 to 9 point lead the whole game. So I don't know. I'd probably pick Florida in that kind of game, but it would definitely be close. I agree with Phil.
Yeah, I think the edge Carolina might have is they're probably a little bit deeper than the Florida team was, but yeah. I think man for man, the starting five, Florida's probably a little bit better.
That's a good point. Let's talk a little bit about the Big East. We came into this, you know, in our preview thing, like, oh, the Big East is going to dominate and everything. Didn't have the team in the championship game. Didn't have a team in the championship game, I should say. What do we feel like that said about, you know, like the season-long dominance of the Big East and then not, you know, performing in the postseason?
They still did very well. They had two of the four Final Four teams, which is pretty impressive.
Three in the Elite Eight.
Yeah, and three in the Elite Eight. So I think the Big East had a great showing. Louisville clearly let them down. Yeah. But, I mean, one of the big schools that you had a Elite Eight matchup that was all Big East, mm-hmm. Pitt-Villanova. So they have four in the Elite Eight.
Four in the Elite Eight, yeah.
So, I mean, they did UConn and Louisville being the other two. So, I mean, they did a great job. Obviously represented their conference well. I mean, Michigan State getting into the championship game isn't, like, catapulting the Big Ten at the forefront of the college basketball season. So I was impressed with the Big East.
All right, let's move on to our last topic here, spring practice. Phil, they had a couple injuries out there this week. Run us through them.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with Mike McCall's lead in Tuesday's notes. The Gators really are dropping like flies. Maybe not most notably, but a big hit that came in Monday's practice was freshman tight end Desmond Parks suffered what Urban Meyer called a sprained knee and had to be carted off the field. you laugh, Kyle, but it is slightly a problem.
I'm very concerned about Desmond Parks. What does that do for their title hopes next year?
I don't know. They're probably diminished.
Can you recover from a sprained knee in 4 months?
You should point out the fact that, first of all, he needs to get developed. You know, he's an incoming freshman. He doesn't just walk in here.
Desmond Parks isn't ready to go.
I mean,
the Gators can't win. There's no chance. All
right. Well, we'll just run with Aaron Hernandez as the only tight end on the roster because that's how it is right now.
I'm okay with that.
Okay. Anyway, Urban Meyer, in interesting, possibly notable news, said they might just do without a tight end if Aaron Hernandez ever got hurt, which Kyle probably doesn't care about either. The wide receiver.
I think that helps make my point, not yours.
Yeah.
Desmond Parks so disposable that they wouldn't even go to him in an event of an injury for Aaron Hernandez.
No, it's just Urban Meyer adapts his offense. He's just a mastermind of
genius. Right. Agreed. Meaning he wouldn't use Desmond Parks.
Would he use Desmond Parks anyway? Would he use him anyway? I've heard nothing but like hateful remarks about Desmond Parks.
Urban was high on him. They might have tried some of that two tight end stuff.
Well, a couple weeks ago, he said Parks didn't know his right from his left.
Yeah,
said
he looked like a saucer eyes.
It's early. It's early in Parks' career.
Strong. And wide receiver is the battle to be. You know, the next top wide receiver took a bit of a hit. David Nelson sprained his right foot during the scrimmage on Saturday and was on crutches Monday. I know nobody needs development, Kyle. Why do you even have
Would you say
practice?
That puts him behind Andre DeBose? Oh, we don't know because he's not out there yet because that's how little spring practice
Oh, well, it's
going to
be Andre DeBose. He's going to be the only wide receiver that does anything?
No, I'm just saying all the players aren't even there. That's how little this means.
I know, but the people that are there could use this time to get better, so injuries doesn't help that process.
No, it doesn't help, but it's just so inconsequential for the rest of the
season. Why have spring practice?
I agree. No. For the fans.
Deontay Thompson, also, who was supposed to be big in the running for number one spot at wide receiver, also did not practice. Meyer called it a hamstring injury. On defense, linebackers Dustin Doe and A.J. Jones were held out of practice on Monday. Although Meyer's not worried because he's never worried about injuries because he says everybody's fine always.
That he does.
James Wilson, once again, the oft-injured Pontevedra knee star that Mike McCall really likes, who
because
was a five-star offensive lineman recruit, is getting an MRI Monday night, I believe. We obviously do not have the results of that yet. And so it's just kind of it's a shame because the offense isn't getting a chance to click. Tebow was frustrated after Saturday's scrimmage, very visibly frustrated during the scrimmage as well. Because he feels like he's not getting a chance to work on timing. They're trying to put in eye formation stuff, but as Kyle pointed out, they don't have the people right now, so you can't put in anything new. That, I would argue, is possibly one of the big positives of spring practice is to try new wrinkles, which Urban likes to do each year. One thing they want to do this year was eye formation. Last year it was more the hurry-up, two-minute thing, which I would say paid off for them down the stretch because they were obviously better in crunch time. Which they were just better overall, so that's hard to argue. Go ahead, Deacon.
Just one other note, Jeff Dentz is also done for the spring, not because he's hurt, but because he's going to be running track. So
that's right, he ran at the Florida Relays last weekend. All right, Phil, you got anything else about the injuries or anything?
No more injuries. It was a little interesting today. You know, there's been that report about Percy Harvin possibly failing a drug test at the NFL Combine. I don't know where I stand on this because the report's coming from NFL Draft Bible.com.
You said that with as little disgust as you can muster.
No one else is reporting this. But anyway,
it's in the Bible.
Meyer refused to comment on the situation and would not answer if Harbin ever failed the drug test while at UF.
Did they ask that question?
Well, yes, the question. Okay, the question was posed to him as, would you be shocked if it was true that Percy failed the drug test? To which he immediately replied, yes. And then after that, upon further probing, he was like, I'm not going to comment on things like that.
Yeah, the follow-up question, when he said he would be shocked, the follow-up question was, has Harbin ever failed the drug test while at UF? And to quote Urban Meyer, he said, I'm not going to talk about guys or stuff like that, end quote.
So,
wow.
So.
Insightful commentary. You can only get at spring practice, which you love so much, Kyle. Even the media at spring practice is just amazing, right?
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, whatever. I have nothing to say about spring practice. It's lame. We shouldn't even talk about it. I feel like it means nothing. It's just like guys running around in shorts.
They had pads on, for the record.
They had pads on today?
Yeah.
Well, the last couple
They've
days.
They've had pads since a week, I want to say.
The first Saturday of spring practice is when they did pads.
Yeah. Great. It's over a week.
Chaz Henry throwing the ball beautifully in DB drills.
Yeah, I talked to him about that last, or actually the beginning of fall, and he was pretty excited. He's like, yeah, throwing interceptions is a lot of fun.
It's going to happen. He's going to get a touchdown pass this year. Mark it down.
You're crazy.
Henry, surprise pick of the year.
I mean, they're training him to throw interceptions. So I throw an interception and a touchdown.
He throws a good ball. He's a pretty decent quarterback.
I think
he's a high school quarterback.
Yeah, you want to say championship playing quarterback in high school.
I think he'd be their fifth string quarterback right now.
No, I'm not saying he's going to go in and take his
No, you're saying it's a trick play.
Yeah. All right, and I think by Kyle's request here, we're not going to talk anymore about spring practice. In fact, I think that about wraps it up for today's show, a little shorter than our most recent very prolific efforts where we've gone over an hour here. So send any feedback to sports@alligator.org, comment on our blogs. Maybe subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us some reviews there. We'd appreciate anything we can get. And check back probably Friday for another podcast. We'll give out our weekly awards and all the stuff we usually do then. And thanks for listening.
Red Wings 4, Sabres 1.
We are out.